Senator John Walsh's campaign has essentially gone dark as Montana political pundits await word on whether or not he'll stay in the U.S. Senate race. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Christopher Allen. We'll have updates on Western Montana's wildfires, and former U.S. Senator Max Baucus donates to the Mansfield Library at the University of Montana.
Senator John Walsh has taken personal time at his Helena home as his campaign canceled events and avoided questions about whether the Montana Democrat plans to remain in the U.S. Senate race amid allegations that he plagiarized a research paper. Walsh was scheduled to be at a Jackson, Wyoming fundraiser yesterday with Colorado Senator Mark Udall, but did not attend. His campaign also notified Gallatin County Democratic Party members that the senator would not appear at a backyard meet-and-greet in Bozeman, hosted by Woman for Walsh. That was scheduled for Wednesday, or a Friday talk on public lands at the county's party's new headquarters. Nobody answered the door at Walsh's home today. Pascaluska declined to answer questions about Walsh's plans or the postponement of campaign events.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has published a new proposed agreement that would share management of the National Bison Range with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. The 18,800-acre refuge is within the boundaries of western Montana's Flathead Indian Reservation. The tribe cited their historical and cultural ties to the land in seeking to manage the government-run refuge and visitor center for the past 20 years. Two previous management-sharing agreements have failed in the past decade. Will Meeks is Assistant Regional Director for the National Wildlife Refuge System in the Mountain Prairie region. Meek says the first annual funding agreement was not renewed in 2005 after claims of inadequate performance issues on behalf of the CSKT employees, complaints of the tribes refuted.
Of course, pursuant to NEPA, we have that 30-day period, and that really is where we can look at that wide range of social input as far as the comments on all of the alternatives in the NEPA document, and that will ultimately inform the regional director's decision, which are twofold. One would be whether or not we would issue a FONSI, finding of no significant impact, or trigger an EIS.
Under the latest proposed AFA, Meek says measures have been proposed to improve financial systems and inclusion of a leadership team to assist with oversight.
Between the second and the third AFA, the second one we had what was considered a co-equal deputy. That's no longer in place. What we do have is a proposed CSKT manager that would help with the day-to-day oversight of the Environmental Visitor Services Program, the maintenance program, and the fire program.
A government-employed refuge manager would sign off on all plans. A public comment period on the proposal is now underway.
Of course, pursuant to NEPA, we have that 30-day period, and that really is where we can look at that wide range of social input as far as the comments on all of the alternatives in the NEPA document, and that will ultimately inform the regional director's decision, which are twofold. One would be whether or not we would issue a FONSI, finding of no significant impact, or trigger an EIS.
Calls placed to the tribes for comment were not returned. To find a copy of the agreement, visit fws.gov/bisonrange.
The Thompson River Complex fires are 18% contained, up from the 0% yesterday. The group of fires includes the Spruce Creek and Spruce 2 fires, as well as the Cuckoosint 1 and Cuckoosint 2. The fires have so far burned 193 acres. The Cuckoosint fires account for most of the burned land, and officials say those fires are visible from Highway 200. Lolo National Forest spokesman John Hamilton says the fires are being closely monitored as they move down toward the Clark Fork Valley bottom.
It's on a real steep, rocky slope leading down into Clark Fork Valley. And as it gets closer down to the bottom, it's, of course, getting close to some private property, and there are some homes in those properties. They're fairly fire safe. You know, they're pretty much out in the open in fields and stuff. But, you know, they are still of concern. You know, you get a freak wind, you never know what could happen.
Officials say there is a chance of rolling debris from the Cuckoosint fires reaching Highway 200. The Montana Department of Transportation has placed large electronic reader boards along the highway east and west of the fires. There are no new fire reported on the east side of Lolo since yesterday. Also, as we reported yesterday, a Stage 1 fire restriction will go into effect tonight at midnight. Officials say the outbreak of several dozen fires this week and continued hot and dry weather has prompted them to issue the fire restriction. The fire restriction prohibits campfires outside of designated campgrounds and metal fire rings, as well as any smoking outside a vehicle, building, or near anything flammable. It affects the Bitterroot and Lolo National Forests, the Flathead Indian Reservation, all Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Park regions, as well as the following counties: Mineral, Missoula, Ravalli, and Sanders County, south of the Kootenai National Forest. The restrictions do not apply to wilderness areas or on personal property. For more information on Stage 1 fire restrictions, visit www.firerestrictions.us.
A fisherman spotted a man's body in the Clark Fork River in Missoula on Tuesday evening. Missoula County Sheriff spokesman Paige Pavlone says the body was spotted at about 3:35 p.m.
So the sheriff's office responded. Two coroners were sent out there, including the undersheriff, Josh Clark, and they confirmed that there was a body in the water. So search and rescue was paged out shortly after that time.
Search and rescue volunteers just happened to be attending a community event nearby and were able to reach the body within minutes after the report came in.
Four search and rescue workers went down and waded in the water. They brought rafts with them, but rafts weren't needed. They were able to wade in the water, and the body was hung up on a rock outcropping and some logs. So they were able to wade in the water, dislodge him, and then remove him from the river without incident. And then he was subsequently transported to the state crime lab.
Pavlone says the body appeared to have been in the water for quite a while.
It was difficult to determine the age of the person because of the level of decomposition, and that's why they expedited taking him right to the crime lab.
Officials are still investigating the incident.
A tourist flew a drone into a Yellowstone National Park hot spring despite a park ban on drones. The Jackson Hole News and Guide reports that park spokesman Al Nash said the drone's operator reported that the aircraft crashed into the picturesque Grand Prismatic Spring last weekend. Tourists witnessed the crash. The drone submerged in the spring's 160-degree waters. Officials hope to remove it. Grand Prismatic is known for its vivid colors and measures 300 feet across. Nash says few details are being released because the incident is under investigation. In July, a drone crashed into Yellowstone Lake near Grand Village Marina. The officials in Grand Teton National Park issued one citation for flying a camera-carrying drone within park boundaries. That drone was trapped in a tree, and someone later stole it from the tree.
A semi-trailer carrying more than 900 boxes of former U.S. Senator Max Box's congressional files have arrived at the Maureen and Mike Mansfield Library at the University of Montana. Head of Archives and Special Collections Donna McCray tells the Missoulian it will take several years to sort, archive, and make the files available for research. Baucus donated $850,000 in leftover campaign money to the library to cover the cost of archiving the documents. The files unloaded Monday included correspondence from constituents, votes, speeches, recordings, and electronic records. McCray says the boxes appear to be arranged by subject. When the Baucus papers are added to the library's collection, its congressional records will date all the way back to 1907. Baucus now serves as ambassador to China. McCray says the library eventually hopes to house Baucus' ambassador files as well.
And now the forecast for our listening area. For areas west of the divide, the forecast calls tonight for mostly clear skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the mid-40s to lower 50s. On Thursday, it should be mostly sunny with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s. For central Montana, it should be mostly clear tonight with isolated thunderstorms, lows 55 to 60. Thursday should be mostly sunny with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 80 to 90 degrees. And for southwest Montana, it should be mostly cloudy in the evening. Expect scattered showers and thunderstorms throughout the evening, and then isolated showers and thunderstorms after midnight, lows 50 to 55 degrees. Thursday, you should expect mostly cloudy conditions in the morning with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs 75 to 85 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Kohler.
Good Good evening. I'm Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, the area agency on aging for Missoula and Ravalli counties. Do you know what is considered the crime of the 21st century? It is the scam, any scam, that targets people age 60 and older. Because we're seeing a recent upsurge of reports about financial scams from older adults, their families, and retirement facilities, tonight's commentary is focused on one prevalent type, the telemarketing scam. I hope the story and tips I share will help you to not fall victim to this crime. According to the National Consumers League, nearly a third of all telemarketing fraud victims are age 60 or older. Why are older adults targeted so much? It's partly because they are thought to have a lot of money in their accounts. But scammers prey upon wealthy and low-income seniors alike, mainly because older adults are generally too polite to hang up. There are not just older victims who are isolated or lonely. Many are active people, lured in by great-sounding deals. The FBI reports that thousands of fraudulent telemarketing companies operate in the U.S., with an increasing number located in Canada and other countries targeting U.S. residents. Types of scams reported in Montana lately include callers offering a year of free groceries, offering information that is already available for free, or purporting to be from the person's bank. This in exchange for a name, birth date, Social Security, or Medicare number. Here's a recent example from right here in western Montana. An older woman was contacted by someone she understood to be from the Department of Consumer Affairs, who said she had won $550,000. To claim the money, she only needed to send a cashier's check for $1,000, which she did. She was contacted again and told to send an additional $1,050, and again she sent it. At that point, the caller told her not to tell anyone. Weeks went by, so she called the number and left messages. Finally, she heard from the caller, who said the delay was with the security company responsible for delivering the money. They needed an additional $975 to guarantee she would receive the winnings along with all the money she had already sent. She appealed to him about her limited income, finally telling him never to contact her again. That is when she came to us for help. Feeling emotionally devastated by the experience, she did not tell her children nor contact a lawyer, but did allow us to report this to the Federal Trade Commission as long as her name was not used. This heart-wrenching story illustrates the financial and emotional impact such scamming has on its victims. Let me share some important tips so that something similar won't happen to you or someone you know. First, realize the telemarketers are hardened criminals who don't care about the pain they cause when they steal someone's money. Simply do not answer the phone if you don't recognize a number on caller ID. Simply do not answer the phone if you don't recognize a number on caller ID or let the answering machine take the call. If you do pick up the phone and the caller begins to pitch, hang up. Never give any personal information like address, Social Security number, Medicare number, or bank account information over the phone. Legitimate companies and organizations will not ask for this information by phone. If an offer sounds too good to be true, it probably is. If the caller pressures you for information or a response right away, hang up. Don't be lured by the promise of gifts, prizes, vacations, and money if you act now. If a caller continues to badger you, tell your adult children or call the area agency on aging nearest you. Finally, if you think you've fallen victim to a scam, report it to the Federal Trade Commission. Even if you file your complaint anonymously, you'll be helping prevent the scammer from victimizing others. These devastating crimes often leave victims very embarrassed and distressed. Watch for the signs in an older adult in your life. If he or she gets lots of calls from strangers or seems to receive a lot of trinkets in the mail, ask questions compassionately. You may want to get support from his or her banker or the police. Unfortunately, once scammers have personal information, including names of family members, they often appear persistent, sweet, and patient. It can take the support of family, friends, and professionals to break their hold on a victim, or better yet, to not let it happen in the first place. I hope the story of the brave woman who came to us has made you more aware of this crime of the 21st century and motivated you to do what you can to stop it. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, and as always, thanks for listening.
Susan Kohler is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening. And please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.